The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
He looked in at the Board of Trade again. He took a slow recuperative bottle of stout. He was dissatisfied with the ambience. Too many Irish. There were by now 10,000 Hibernian to the town, and they had the place destroyed. A fellow Corkman, drinking at his westerly elbow, leaned in with an accent from the rim of Bantry originally. "You hear about Two-Bit Billy?" "Shot his own toes off," Tom Rourke recited, "at the Alley Cat Bar." "Not the way I heard it. Happened at the Big Stop Bar. I seen eyewitnesses describing Two-Bit mostly he'd been drinking with the Finns down the Helsinki Bar." "When did that all start?" "March. They was drinking for St. Doro, the fellow what chased the grasshoppers out of Finland."
"And Two-Bit fell in?"
"Two-Bit fell in. The man is companionable."
"Where did the grasshoppers head to?" "We're getting off the track of it, boy. Was it the right or the left toes, the way you heard it?"
That is an excerpt from The Heart in Winter, the new book from Kevin Barry, narrated by Kevin Barry. Kevin, a pleasure. Thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me in, man. I'm great to be here.
Congratulations on the book.
Thanks.
So this is the first of your novels set in the US, in the States.
Yeah.
And you went straight in for kind of the Western adventure well.
Madly, like,
go big or go home.
Yeah, that's it. Weirdly enough, it was the first book I tried to write back in 1999. I had a notion. I read about this story about all the copper miners from West Cork moving to Butte, Montana. And I went out there to research it. Tried to write the book, wasn't able to at the time. And late in the pandemic, the notion of it came back to me. It's time to write my Western with Cork accents, you know. And I went in, kind of had a ball with it. It was fun to write.
Yeah, because I have to say now, I really enjoyed the book, but I knew nothing about that connection to be. And it was only afterwards, kind of, when you start Googling things.
It's a crazy story.
Yeah, like, how many? And even to this day,
they were electrifying America. So they needed copper miners in Butte, Montana. And the copper mines in Alahees and Berra had just played out. And that had been a big operation. So suddenly there was 10,000 Irishmen in a little town high in the Rocky Mountains making great money and losing the run of themselves in the classic Irish lads abroad kind of way, you know?
Yeah, and that's the kind of the setting for the beginning of the movie, where our protagonist is absolutely losing the run of themselves in kind of not just drink, but dope as well.
And everything,
the hallucinogenic side of it as well is explored. And it's, I guess, like any novel that finds itself in that part of the world, the kind of the world building is a big part of it, isn't it? Like the scenery and the backdrop, and it's kind of like a Deadwood beginning, isn't it, for people
Absolutely,
who are fans of it?
You've spotted a major influence, I would say, on the book. I was a huge fan of the Deadwood.
Were you sorry it ended the way it did?
I was very sorry it ended. And he didn't get to play it out properly, David Milch, the creator of the show. But Butte's a crazy place. I remember when I went out there in 1999, like when you show up with an actual Irish accent, you're embraced to the bosom of the town very quickly. And they were lovely, you know, they're really nice people. And they're great talkers, and they gave me all the history and all the background. They were showing me letters in the library that miners from Cork had sent home in 1890. I had this fabulous material, so I knew it was a great setting. I just needed the characters, and it took a long time for the characters to come. And the fact that it was really just a very simple love story, these runaway lovers taken off from Butte, Montana in 1891, you know?
So how does one kind of return to a book? Is it that you get an idea somewhere else and you remember, God, I'd stored that book somewhere away under the bed? Or is it that it's always kind of gnawing away at the ankle? Or what's your experience on
it? The original version is literally under a bed in a spare room.
And I'm afraid what else is under the bed?
The box, you know? it's just like the weird thing with a job or a career writing fiction is there's no plan. As such, you know, it's kind of a game you play by feel, and often what you need is patience and just to sit it out and wait for a story to be ready to write. I wasn't able to write this book in 1999. I didn't know how to reduce all the great material that I had down. I didn't know how to chop away at it, you know. And like when you read bad historical fiction, you can see all the research on the page. But when you read the really good stuff, something like Hilary Mantel's Cromwell books, there's no sense of effort there, you know. It all feels fresh and contemporary. And it just takes time to develop the chops to do it, you know. And I knew as soon as I started writing it, I'm ready now. My Western is there now. I always knew there was a horse opera in me, you know. And it was probably the best fun I've had.
Yeah, really. That's interesting the way you describe it. Like there's obviously a skills you develop as your writing progresses, but it's a confidence thing as well, is it? That when you're young, maybe you've done all the research, You want to show it off.
Like early on, I think in a writing life or career, like ability and ambition aren't in perfect balance.
Okay,
you're often
yeah.
tried to do things that you're not quite ready for yet, that you don't really have the skill for yet, and you just have to wait it out. And mostly for me now, it's about the people. It's having the people very clear in my mind, the characters, and being able to hear them and see them and feel them, you know, and really kind of, to a quite nutty degree, I'd say, I really live with them when I'm writing the book. I reside with them, you know,
yeah.
thinking about them. So it's an all-in immersive process. I write the novels quite quickly, maybe 10 or 11 months this took me. But for that, like, I'm very much in the world of the book, to the point where I get very kind of sad at the end when they're Tom and Polly aren't in my shed out the back anymore, you know,
yeah.
to move on to the next thing.
Might they be, or might there be other characters from that world we see? I don't want to give away the end, but I mean, is there a hint at the end that there's more from the world of Butte, Montana?
It's a great world, you know.
Yeah.
I love Westerns, and Butte, Montana now feels like a really nice piece of real estate for me,
yeah.
I have to say. So yeah. Who knows? I'd write nothing off as a possibility in the long run.
So one thing as well, I think, that might strike people when they read it is it's not the typical story of the cliched Irish immigrant experience in the States, you know. And if you ask one of these kind of generative AI things to paint you a picture, it'll be the huddled masses at Ellis Island and all of that. And not only is it not that, you're kind of There's an actual rejection of that wistfulness, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. And Tom Rourke, the main character, is a very sniffy kind of young fella, and he hates all these immigrants.
Yeah, even the way he talks about it, the sewers have spewed these people out into this part of the world.
But it's really interesting to look away the Irish communities established themselves in places like Butte, Montana, and always the first move was we'll open 38 pubs, you know, and from there we'll take over the police, and then we'll take over the political apparatus. And if you went back to Butte 10 years after this book is set, it was a complete Irish machine kind of town, you know. We're good migrants.
Yeah.
We're good at it, you know.
Yeah.
We're kind of personable and get on well when we go abroad. And also there's a native kind of canniness about organising things and how to organise new societies that we've always had.
But I like as well that Tom, like for a guy who's kind of vocally and explicitly rejecting that wistfulness, he's doing it kind of on this pub crawl, drinking stout and whiskey in every bar in town. If you didn't know him, if you didn't have access to his inner monologue, you'd think there's a typical Irishman now.
Yeah, but he has, he's kind of great notions about himself.
Yeah.
What he is actually is he's a young literary man.
Yeah,
and that's an exalted position to find yourself in, and it's also usually a kind of a bit of a disaster at the same time. You know, he's searching for who he is.
Yeah.
He doesn't know who he is, and it's only when this lovely, mysterious woman called Polly Gillespie arrives out of the East that suddenly he knows exactly who he is.
Yeah,
and it takes off as a real love story, and I'd have to say as a lust story as well.
Yeah,
total lust story.
Is it a book that you would like to see somebody take ownership of and put it on screen?
Hasn't even crossed my mind.
Go way out of that.
So we'll see what happens down the line. No, obviously, like I'm very influenced by film and television as much as I am by books. And so hopefully at some point, I'm talking to people already about the possibility of it.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's interesting you say how influenced you are. I remember you saying before, and I can't remember the context, so apologies, but it was about how the greatest fiction writing in America was happening on television.
It was.
It's about time kind of books take it back.
You had that great golden age, I think, at TV with The Sopranos and Mad Men and Breaking Bad. I think it's over, personally.
Yeah.
I think we're in a kind of a blander period now on the television front, at least. Hopefully it'll come back. But I don't think since Breaking Bad there's been a truly great show. Succession was a very good show. But for me, nothing has hit the heights of that sort of late zeros, early tens kind of period where these great shows were appearing all the time.
Yeah.
Deadwood is the best of them. Still.
Deadwood was absolutely brilliant. And I was like you. I was sorry the way it ended and the way it had to end.
Afterwards, to kind of tie up the loose ends movie, and it was kind of nice, but it wasn't the thing, you know?
No, there were so many different plates spinning and things moving in different directions. I loved it. And Ian McShane was just absolutely amazing in it. He's amazing in so many things. Are there other things under the bed that you might go back to?
I think, like, because this one was such a long kind of gestation, you know, I do think back, I think, is there anything else at the back of my mind still? And I know I spend a good bit of time in the very early 90s in London, and often down around Soho and stuff, at a time when that neighbourhood was really transforming from old Soho into what you have now, a new, very gentrified place. And I sometimes think there's something there for me. But I haven't got the characters yet.
All right. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Maybe someday. And we'll be back in Butte, Montana, I'm sure, between now and then. Kevin, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks a million for having me, man. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.